Hello and welcome to The Cynic Weekly. I am your host, Christopher Gallagher, and I'm joined by Christopher Samani. Hello, Christopher. How are you, my friend?
I'm not bad. Hail Times 2. Great to be here.
Lovely. Let's get into it. Lovely stuff. That's your new catchphrase, Hail Times 2. Superb. Alan Edgar's also here. Hello, Alan. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. I'm really good. I'm looking forward to this.
Lovely stuff. We've got a rundown. We're going to talk about, we're going to look ahead to the Dundee United game. We're going to maybe look back a little bit at the Hearts game, but ultimately the thing that's kind of an all of our minds and all of our thoughts is the Champions League draw, which took place today. Obviously, it took about 45 million years to get there. Did you enjoy the whole preamble before Chris? Was it exciting? Did you enjoy it?
I didn't really watch it.
No, do you not? No.
No, you just kind of check your texts and see what's happening and, you know, look at it. But no, I can't remember the last time I actually watched the Champions League draw unfold with all the balls and all that. Nah, no for me.
I do it for the Europa League and all that, and it's a whole lot of nonsense, Alan. It's a whole lot of pish.
It's like, see, back in the day, sorry, Alan, you remember you used to give a show when the lottery was on? You know, yeah. Keys the numbers, mate. You know, you don't really want to see any of the other crap that was involved with.
That's right, yeah, that's weird. Alan, how excited were you before? We'll talk about the draw in a minute, but like, it is a really, this sort of day for being a Celtic fan with the Champions League draw, it is a really, emotionally, you're pulled all over the place.
Yeah, I think it's just really exciting. I think it is the period of time now, 5 years since we have had it, I think meant that I was willing to sit and watch the whole thing. And I did, I watched it. I had the page sitting for about 10 minutes before, and then I even checked to make sure, because it just said draw coming shortly. So I just had to make sure that my internet hadn't frozen and actually the draw had taken place. So, I mean, it was an exceedingly long time, but I did enjoy it. I enjoyed the suspense. I think my definition of how I'm willing to spend 45 minutes now has vastly changed since 2017 when we were last in there. So, I was looking forward to it. Really exciting. It's just good to be back at that kind of top table of European football again, that's for sure.
Absolutely. So the draw was made. We came out in Group F with Real Madrid, which is a team that I think everyone was kind of looking at, thinking we've never played them before. That's a great opportunity. RB Leipzig, who we played in the Europa League fairly recently. Shakhtar Donetsk as well, that's the kind of third seed. So Real Madrid, Leipzig, Shakhtar and Celtic, Group F. Instant reaction to that, Christopher, how were you feeling when you saw the draw? We were the first out of the pot four as well.
We were. Not that I seen it at the time, but I found out shortly afterwards. Pleased with that. You know, I think most of the support had assumed that we were going to get the hardest possible draw and they would get the easiest possible draw, but it hasn't turned out that way. Now, Real Madrid, it's got the glamour. We've not played them since the early 80s. So, I mean, all of us weren't born the last time we played Real Madrid, so it's been a long, long time. A tie that a lot of people had wanted. So, if you're wanting a glamour draw, you can't really get much more glamorous than current and reigning European champions, four-time, 14 times winners. Actually, I've seen a wee thing on Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Group F has the most Champions League titles with it. 14 for Real Madrid, one for us.
Take it.
But yeah, I mean, that's what you want. But then you've also got two teams who, not that I'm making predictions just now, but you look at them and you think, certainly at Celtic Park, we should be able to take points off them. You've got to be looking to the Leipzig games and the Shakhtar games at Celtic Park and saying you need to go and win those, and you've then got a hope of trying to take points off them from away from home. There are some draws where we could have got, and you would have quite literally said, we have no chance of qualifying.
We're making up the numbers, aye.
This, though, we're definitely live in it. You know, I think, is it a possibility we could qualify? Yes, you know, in terms of how we play, you know, we don't know how we're going to, how Postecoglou's side is going to be in the Champions League. But the calibre of those sides aren't of the standard where you look at them and think it's not achievable for us to do that. And absolutely a Europa League place for third spot is well there. So you've got the glamour, you've got the competitive nature of it. I'm absolutely delighted.
Alan, your kind of initial reaction to it?
Yeah, very similar with regards to the top seed. I think it was either Ajax, Porto or Real Madrid for me. I think Ajax or Porto, because it's a slightly easier comparatively to the other kind of pot one teams, or Real Madrid for exactly the reasons Samani and it just feels like everyone else has said. They are the Champions League is synonymous now with Real Madrid. I don't really like saying that, to be honest, because I'm not a huge fan, but they are synonymous with it. It's become their competition, particularly again over the last decade. And it's a team that, you know, I think everyone wants to face him. Callum McGregor said it. Although I would imagine we won't be replaying those comments for quite a while unless it works out really well. So I was delighted with that. And then what you're looking for the rest of it, I wasn't interested in having that 2017 type draw again where we really just get every game is a glamour game, because we talked about it last week and we worked ourselves, to be honest, up in quite a frenzy thinking about the potential of that. And it's not really, it takes the fun out of it. There's been a lot of discussions recently about what does the Champions League now mean to Celtic? How good is it? You know, is it, do we want to be there? Is the gap too big? This group has the potential to, and I think for most people's reaction is, it maybe takes that away, because you've got two teams in there that they could beat us home and away. We could also beat them home and away.
Yeah.
There are two teams in there. Leipzig, of course, will be second favoured to go through. But I think we've seen that that is a team that you can play and compete against.
All right, can I jump in for a second? You know a little bit more about probably German football than myself and Chris, right? So see Leipzig, the fact that they are very gegenpress, you know, like in a way, not they don't mirror how Ange kind of sets up, but there is a lot of similarities. Do you think that'll work for us or against us?
I think it could work against us potentially. It should make for an exciting game of football. I would imagine the tactical nerds, I feel like, will enjoy that game. That's probably the game that a lot of people will look at, you know, beyond the big glamour ties between Pot 1 teams, which, you know, at this stage, I don't think, I can only speak from my own point of view, but even if we weren't in this draw, I would be looking at it today and I wouldn't even think about, you know, potentially big games, you know, Bayern Barcelona. That holds no allure for me in a group stage game. If it's a semi-final, absolutely.
Yeah.
If it's a group stage, because they're both going to go through. So, but I think that game against two very unique styles of football, particularly Postecoglou's, I think a lot of people will have eyes on that. Whether it works for us against us, to be honest, you could toss a coin and you could have a team that could sit in against us and they might get a lot of joy from that and they might press, hit us in the counter. Or you could actually have a team like Leipzig that come and try and really stuff us and stop us getting out from the back. But again, it's kind of like what we talked about last night. If you do get out from that, then they're exposed and they're open. So I think it's a good tie. It's interesting. And I think you've seen last season from Leipzig, they can have a soft underbelly. And this is my only very, very slight concern about the draw. Everyone's now looking at it. Mm. And I mean fans here. Everyone is looking at it now thinking, there's two teams there, we should definitely take 6 points at home. We need to see all three games that we're going to go to, we need to treat them all like it's Real Madrid, because we have had the tendency that there has been some flat Champions League games at Celtic Park.
Push Emerson Gladbach, anyone?
Yeah, absolutely. We need to get away from that continental style of we go and we feed off the players. We should just go and do what I think we largely have done in European games at Celtic Park over the years, and just go and make as much noise, make it a really intimidating place to come. See if it doesn't make a difference in a park, so be it. All we've done is shout and fucking scream for 90 minutes. But I'd like to get back to that. Don't have that atmosphere of, well, you know, save Shakhtar's match day one. You need to treat it like it means everything.
Yeah.
3 points against Shakhtar is more important than 3 points potentially against Real Madrid. One might be more memorable than the other, but in terms of the dynamics of the group, you can bet that you would take a win over Shakhtar more than you would take a win over Real Madrid at this point, because it's more likely to push you higher up the table.
Yeah, and also, yeah, do them kind of damage in regards to their points total. Shakhtar obviously being the third team, Chris. Everything that's happened in Ukraine, obviously, with the war and the invasion and everything, is obviously like devastating. I was just looking at how the Ukrainian league obviously ended in March. So no titles were given. But they used the league as a barometer, so that's why Shakhtar are in the third seeds. They'll be playing in Warsaw, in Poland. Do you think that, obviously, it's unsettling for them, but, you know, for us, it's going to be an advantage, whether we, you know, like to admit it or not, it's going to be an advantage for us.
Just going back, though, that's set up for us. Totally messed that up, to be perfectly honest. But dealing with the situation at hand, yeah, it is. I mean, I think Shakhtar always traditionally had a lot of Brazilian players. They no longer do. I think a lot of their players are out on loan. There's rumours that they're trying to sign Marian Šved. Let's hope not, because he'll play and score probably. But
yeah. Oh, 100%. No but, doubt.
But notwithstanding, even if he signs and plays and scores, Marian Šved is not a particularly good great football yeah. player. And Shakhtar Donetsk traditionally spent a fair bit of money. You know, we've played them before. They've always had a strong squad. Obviously, circumstances with what's happening in Ukraine has meant that they're playing their home games in the league in Kiev, but they're playing in Warsaw. Undeniably, that's... I mean, even when we go to the ground, I don't know what the ticket situation will be like. There'll probably be a lot of locals, Polish locals there. It's not going to be the same as if you'd went to the Donbass or in Donetsk back in the day when they played there. It's, the dynamic's going to be completely different. However, again, the point that Alan made there is a really strong one. I think it goes away from home and at home as well, more so with Shakhtar. You have to treat it with the utmost seriousness and yeah. not think that we've been... I mean, look at Bodo. I mean, yeah. everybody was talking about, you know, Berg.
Copenhagen?
Yeah, well, Berg had went to Lons, or was it Lons I think he signed for, and a lot of their players have moved on. They're just coming out of their pre-season. Yeah. We're going to smash them, and the absolute opposite happened. So... you'd hope that the manager's got the prepared the squad mentally to approach each of these games almost like the home game against Real Madrid, six cup finals, all the cliches that you want to put out there. That's what you need to do. Shakhtar especially, because potentially we have gained an advantage through tragedy. However, it is set up for Celtic not to take to capitalise on that advantage. So,
yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think that... you know, this feels like it feels like we could qualify, but also feels like we could finish bottom, just because of all of the. It's like we were talking about on I think on the agenda on this week, cynic.co, sign up for daily podcasts. We were talking about expectations and about how I was talking about Matt O'Reilly and about there's an expectation on him that he's just going to become a fantastic player without really taking into consideration timelines and stuff. And I think that you always said, Chris, that it's, our expectations may be set as a part in regards to other football clubs, and I completely buy into that. But it's just about tapering those expectations on a game-by-game basis, Alan, and just kind of focusing on the opposition as opposed to just being like, we should beat them because... they're not a bigger team than we could have got.
I think as fans, we are much more likely to think like that. I don't think the players will. I don't think the coaching staff will allow them to. You will know that those three sides are more than capable of coming to Celtic Park and winning. And by the same token, we could go and there's not necessarily a fear to be had in going to play Shakhtar or Leipzig. Real Madrid, I think most people would treat it as a bye, although they did lose against Sheriff last year.
That's so right.
Yeah. I remember watching that. And to be fair, Real Madrid's run to the final last year was kind of miraculous in the end, but they looked miles off it. So hopefully they've had their zenith. If we could get a team on the way down from pot one, that would be fantastic.
Exclusive. Real Madrid flipped the Champions League last season. They were shite.
There for the taking, Alan Edgar says.
So I think it is... the overwhelming emotion that I think that I have off the back of the draw, and I think most people, including players, coaches, everything, they will look at that and say that there is a massive platform there to go and be competitive. Yeah. What I feared pre the draw was that we would get a difficult draw and it would be quite a chastening experience, mm-hmm. like we have had done. And it is probably because we are... you know, scarred from that experience in 2017. It was no fun going and watching us, and we are so far off it. And I know that that's because the quality of our teams are good, but see when you go to Celtic Park and you've had two or three pints before the game and you sit and you get yourself worked up and 10 minutes in, you know that this is the disparity in qualities. So that's what you don't want. This group gives everyone a platform, and I think particularly the attacking players, mm-hmm. it gives them a platform. They've got a glamour game in which, you know, you do something in there, great. But I've got two other games there. There is a realistic potential that you could qualify from this group. They might not, and I don't think if they don't, I wouldn't see it as a disgrace or certainly maybe even not a disappointment. But they have a chance to be competitive in this group.
Yeah.
And Postecoglou's style can be implemented against these teams successfully. And if it does, That's why a lot of these players are here. That's why they've taken the opportunity to come here, to stay here. It's kind of over to them now.
We've still got an unknown about how the side are going to perform at this level. That's the one question mark you've got about Postecoglou. The Europa League group stages, there was enough green shoots there that people are taking, you know, solace from that. But the Bodo game, and I'm not saying Bodo, I mean, Bodo have subsequently proven that they're a tidy European outfit, you know. They're not brilliant, you know, but they look like a team who were more cohesive and further along in their development than us. But the nature in which they beat us wasn't good enough, so there is still a big, massive question mark there in terms of how we're going to turn up. This group gives us a platform to go and do that. Now, it might be that we rise to the occasion, or that we don't rise to the occasion. I know that sounds simplistic, but there are some groups whereby you wouldn't be able to go and even show that.
Yeah.
You wouldn't come away from a group, what is it, Group H? I think that's the...
Who's in Group H, Shelley?
Group H is PSG, Juventus, Benfica, and then Maccabi Haifa, which potentially would have been us.
Yeah. So Benfica possibly, right? But that would be a group that you would be in, and you would be none the wiser how
good
what level we are performing at. That's not the case now. There is an opportunity there to go and show where we are and what we're capable of, and I think that's really important in terms of a barometer for the manager and for the team.
I think right off the back of that as well, because we are... I think you can probably... I'm very enthused by it. I'm really excited.
Yeah,
I'm really pleased with it. If you'd offered me that earlier, I would have been really, really pleased with it. What now becomes really important is that order of games when you face different teams. Because what we've always wanted, I think, in a Pot 1 team is for them to almost take them out of the equation. And the way that you take them out of the equation is say that, well, they get maximum points. If they do, then it becomes a fight between the other three teams. It then becomes quite important who plays that Pot 1 team on the last match day versus match day 4.
Yes.
Things like that become quite important. You know, do you want to...
You want Real Madrid in the last at home on the last match day and they've already qualified?
Or away. You know, I don't think home or away. I do think, and we're going to... Down a different discussion, I think this team, our Celtic team, are quite well set up to play away from home. But that's, you know, that's neither... I think maybe asking them to do it at the Bernabeu might be ambitious, but okay, let's get carried away. I think that then becomes the next important thing, how the order of the matches are, because that can be really crucially important. You know, if you have Real Madrid match day 1 and match day 4, it's a very different prospect to potentially having a match day 3 and 6. They're always going to have quality players. It might only be a 5, 10, 15% difference. But if you're trying to eke out a point against, you know, a team like that, you take what you can get. So, I'm excited. I just want match day 1. I want it at home.
Right, okay, looking at fixtures. Alan, okay, we'll start with yourself. I'm not asking you to match out the whole thing, but who would be the first team? Would it be Shakhtar at home?
Leipzig at home, for me.
Oh.
I think there would be a good balance there between, it's a big tie, big occasion. If you won that game, it would be an absolutely flying start. You don't want it to be Real Madrid because you want to put that as far down the road as you possibly can and hope that you can maybe get a slight advantage from that. And I would take Shakhtar home on the first day, but for me, I would pick Leipzig home, Celtic Park, and really try and set the tone. I think that would be a huge boost, because I think the Shakhtar game after that, if you do get a positive result, you would take so much confidence into.
Yeah.
I don't think it would necessarily work the other way around. So Leipzig at home would be my preferred option.
Chris, who would you like to start with?
Probably Leipzig at home. I'd quite like a Shakhtar doubleheader where we play them back to back. I think because if you had Leipzig at home first and then you moved into that doubleheader, then if you've won, great. If you've not, you've then got an opportunity to maybe try and immediately make amends for that. Even if you're picking up a point in Warsaw and then coming back and beating them at home, hopefully that would be good for me as well. But, you know, ultimately you don't get to pick it, do you? Even though we're doing that, but ultimately you don't.
I think as well, Shakhtar are going to be the big wild card here because...
We don't know what level they're at.
We don't know where they're at. The league started, I think, the weekend there. And they drew, they have obviously, it's a very different makeup of the squad. That a break like that, the circumstances in which they're playing, they are obviously playing domestically. You know, the league games are being played in Ukraine, but the UEFA games will be played in Poland. There are a lot of different factors there. This isn't just a case of you've drawn a pot three team. There are different elements to this that, you know, will be, that make it very difficult to predict. So I think they are the team that will be, it will be interesting, because you don't really know quite yet what level they're at. So again, that would incline, I'd want to push that back a little bit more, just so that you can maybe get a read off the first or second game.
See, if we went Leipzig at home for the opening game, would that not mean that we potentially would play Leipzig away in the last game?
It'd be match day
6.
Yeah, potentially.
Fair enough.
It could be match day 4 as well.
I guess. Well, do you know,
could be match day 3.
That would just be mental. That would be ridiculous.
The fixtures are being released, Alan, you said, on Saturday?
At the latest, on Saturday morning.
Which seems a bit...
We'll hopefully get a wee leak out tonight. Hopefully Nicholson will have a couple of...
shandies and tweet out.
A couple of bottles of FAs, and he'll be tweeting out tonight.
We had Lewis Laird at Celtic Park, and he spoke to... there was a press conference, and he had asked Kyogo a question. I've cut Kyogo's kind of... bit out so that it's just edited, so it's Lewis's question and then the translation, so we can go straight to it.
Hi Kyogo, with your abilities as a striker on this side, so fast paced and high energy, how much do you believe your style of play will suit this competition?
I'm really excited to see how much I can do it, and at the same time I think I can compete well against these teams. But I definitely want to help our teams, and I'm excited to see what I can do. Probably I will get a lot of chances, or probably a few chances. But one step by step, I can do it. So I will train and work hard to improve more before the competition.
Champions League is one of the reasons we brought in a player like Kyogo. Probably one of the reasons he came to Celtic. How important do you think he'll be, Alan?
I think a lot hinges on him succeeding. You know, I think you asked us a couple of weeks ago, what players do you want to really... which players need to make the step up? And I think if he's the type of player that if he plays well, the whole team tends to play well. And I know that is a cliche, but it is true. It does work. If he's involved a lot... it suggests that we're getting opportunities. I think he's... I think we've said it a lot. He is the type of striker. He probably isn't a get one chance, put it away, and then you don't hear from him again. I think his finishing is... his movement is world-class, but his finishing doesn't tend to be. So you will need to present him with a number of opportunities generally for him to kind of to put them away. But... his movement, his intelligence, and the link-up play that he does have, and the way he makes defenders think, really makes me confident that if we are able to get a good share of possession, then we will create opportunities for him. If he takes them, he takes them. But I have no doubt that he will get himself into positions to score goals at that level as well.
Samana, you mentioned the Europa League campaign last season. You know, you think away to Ferencváros, you think away to Bayer Leverkusen. Fucking electric at points. Is that really what you're looking for when we're away from home specifically?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with both of you when you've said that away from home in Europe, that's set up for Ange's team to shine in terms of the way we play. And the performances over there, I mean, obviously Ferencváros is the only one that we won. But Leverkusen was last season's Real Madrid away. And although we didn't come away with anything, we came away with a pride in terms of how we performed, given the state of the squad at the time. So, and I think it goes back to our saying what we're expecting about this group. See if we come fourth, but there's a lot of that, you know, or really good performances, and you could see the way that we're going. I think a lot of the support will be like, I'm disappointed that we didn't do this, but at the same time, you know, we performed well. So it's that really what you're looking for. That's the kind of benchmark, as you say, to go and give a very good account of ourselves.
Yes.
It's a bare minimum. Going back to the point as well about the Champions League group games that we've been in the past where you've got hammered. That is it for me. It's not acceptable for us to get done in, right? And I think we also need to go and show what we're capable of, give a good account of ourselves. That's really what I'm looking for. And I think those Europa League group games from last season give you confidence, and that is what you're looking for again. Players like Kyogo, Jota, you know, this is a stage that's set up for them. Are you going to be a guy who's a good player in Scotland, or are you going to be a guy who's going to go into a higher level? Let's see. That's what it's about.
Alan, Samani said that we are kind of, this Ange team is more set up for away. Are you worried about the home games? A lot of Celtic teams in the past, and we're going to do a wee Champions League quiz at the end, but a lot of them, we won all our home games and we could not get a win away from home. Obviously, that was Big Sammy's the one to thank for that eventually, but we were set up to play at home. Are we set up better for away, do you think?
I don't think it's that...
I don't think it's that easy either, you know.
No, I don't even... When I say I think we're better set up away from home, it's more that I feel that teams will... probably away from home, will have more possession. You know, the likelihood is when we play Leipzig away, certainly when we play Real Madrid away, that we'll be looking at possession in the 40% region, whereas domestically, we're 75-80%.
Yeah.
And I just feel that at Celtic Park, and it's based on previous teams more than anything else, it's not based on Ange or his system, that it will be much more difficult for the players to experience that at Celtic Park, because that hasn't happened before. So I think the atmosphere around the stadium is different. It can be tricky, especially when it potentially could be a Leipzig team. I think if Real Madrid come and control possession, I think the fan base will cheer everything on, and we do. Historically, though, when the Pot 2 teams come and they control possession, that's when the atmosphere can get a little bit...
For fuck's sake!
Yeah, a little bit damp, yeah. And, you know, there's frustration comes in. So that's why I do kind of think that I would like it if we kind of try to roll back the years a little bit, and actually just every team that comes, just try and really make it horrendous for them, you know? And it's difficult. It's expectation isn't easy. You can't just put it aside. But I feel that away from home, I think from what you've seen in Europe last year, that... the team can go away and just play the football. They're a little bit more comfortable off the ball and out of possession. I think Samani mentioned the Leverkusen game. I was listening to something earlier on today, and it mentioned that, well, that was really good, but then, you know, you lost the game, and you lost it in the last 15 minutes. But you do need to remember the substitutions that we made in that game. They weren't ideal. It wasn't a case of you had to make changes because players, you know, spoiler alert, would go on and, you know, pop hamstrings, and you know it certainly did that throughout that kind of the end of the first half of the season. So you're hoping that this time around it is different. You know, we've got a good squad at the moment, potentially adding to it, and I feel that if you get yourself into that position, and I think it's fairly reasonable to equate Leipzig to Leverkusen, you know, both there or thereabouts, just under that kind of top level team in Germany. If we could do that last year away at Leverkusen with what we had, those kind of green shoots, as you say, I suppose the expectation would be that we go and at the very least compete. I think the translator there used that word. Kyogo didn't say, I'm ready to succeed in the Champions League. I'm ready to compete. That's what it's about, because we want to get results, right? We want to win every game, but it's about making sure that you go and you're competitive and that you play your football, because the 6 games in the Champions League this year will be probably, hopefully, ones we remember. But I'm a really, really firm believer that playing in this competition improves you the following weekend. It really does. You play against Real Madrid on Wednesday night, and, you know, it's a really tough game. Our reaction to even really bad defeats has been really good over the years. And it's because, see, when you go and play against some of the players that you're going to play against, it improves you. You learn from it. And it's not a case of you learn from it 6 months down the line. Things happen in the game that you think maybe weren't possible, and it opens up what you can do. So with a young team as well, I just feel that it really does bode well. So I'm hoping that not only do we do well in these games, but it can drive us on in the league as well. You know, think of those players just now. I know I said Leipzig at home would be great. If that first game was to be Real Madrid home or away, think how intense training will be up until that game, because every single player doesn't even want to make the squad. They want to make that starting 11. That's what it's about. So There's so many benefits to being in this top level of competition, and I do think it can improve you domestically as well. And our record off the back of European games over the years, there's not a lot of travel in here as well, which is obviously helpful. Mm-hmm. Our record off the back of European games, win, lose, or draw, is really, really good. And if that continues as well, it's kind of one hand washing the other. So, yeah, bring it on.
We also, Lewis Laird, 01 on Twitter, check him out. He also spoke to Jens.
As a defender in this attacking Celtic side, you've started to become used to playing against teams in Scotland that are sitting more deeper than the stoppers. How much are you looking forward to testing yourself against teams who are likely to deploy a different and potentially more attacking system?
I think we're all looking forward to play against the teams that play the highest level of football in Europe. It will be obviously a very different approach from the other teams. You know, they will be more offensive, more brave. They will also try to play like we play. So it'll be very exciting, a lot of space, you know, in the game. But like I said, we just have to continue the way we play, be brave, you know, use our strength, which is attacking, and attacking very quick and dangerous things.
Chris, Jens said brave there a lot, which is a key word. I think we have to be brave in possession against, certainly Real Madrid and you know, in pretty much every game. Defensively, it's going to be tough. It's going to be a struggle, but I think that's true of most teams at our level coming up here. Confident in the partnership, would you see Jens getting an opportunity a little bit more, or would it be Starfelt and Carter Vickers for you?
If you were asking me to pick, I would go with the tried and tested partnership, Starfelt and Vickers, although Jens has, he's impressed, you know, at a level where you can't really make a judgment on him, and he doesn't have the consistency that the other two have. So I would go with them, but Jens isn't a guy to me who I've got it in my head is definitely back up to one of them. You know, there's potential for him to go on, but as it stands, not. Talking about being brave in these games, he's exactly right. You know, I think a section of the support have talked about the lack of goalkeeper who can play out from the back, or centre half who can play out from the back. We are still going to do that. We're going to, and to do that, you're going to have to be brave. You're going to have to, you know, playing Real Madrid, you're going to have to, in your head, think that's Benzema coming at me, but treat it the same way that it's Liam Boyce. Because, I just said that. That's what the fuck am I talking about? No, but you need to go and play your game, is what I mean, right? Yeah. You can't be overawed by the opposition. And just said this, I don't change the way I play against who I'm playing against. I think we touched on it last week. There will be tweaks, there will be kind of adjustments. It's not, when he says that, it's not an absolute definite. But generally speaking, we're still going to play out from the back. So you are going to have to be brave. You're not going to be, you can't be awed by the opposition. Otherwise, you'll immediately get in your own head and probably make mistakes.
We have to be brave as fans as well, Alan, and kind of, you mentioned about getting, you know, behind the support, getting behind the team. We have to maybe, you know, try not react when we're under pressure, because, you know, it can affect the players. You can't, you know, I think we've all been at Celtic Park and we've seen players be affected by the crowd positively and negatively as well.
Absolutely, and it does. And I think the style of football will then lend itself, because it's not traditional, you know, if you're in bother, clip the ball up the line. I don't have any doubt that if Ange Postecoglou thinks one of his defenders is in danger and he can't make a pass or he can't go back to the goalkeeper, he will 100% tell them, send it away. But that's not what we want to do. And I think that's where sometimes there's a nervousness, you know. Rio Hatate, for example, was a player that I think he needs to play well for us to succeed in this group stage. He is going to receive the ball and he's going to have pressure on him. You need to trust that he realises that. So it's not a case, it's not pantomime, it's not that he's asking for the ball and he doesn't realise that, you know, he's being pressed by a world-class midfielder, but you need to trust that he's aware of that and he's going to use that. So he's either going to pop the ball away around the corner or he's going to just hold it in, try and win a foul. You don't worry about these things when we do it against, as Samani says, you know, Hearts at the weekend. If Rio Hatate, when he came on, if he had someone up his arse asking for the ball, you didn't bother. You drop it straight into him. The problem is when it's Champions League, people think, and you'll hear it, you will hear it. I'll hear it with the people I'm at the game with probably, but you'll hear people, not there. That's the phrase that you hear a lot. Not there. Don't play into trouble. But
you have to.
Well, Ange Postecoglou has said before, and you might agree with him, you might not, but he said he can't coach any other way. And I believe him. And you've got to let him do what he wants to do. But he's not telling him, play yourselves in danger or pressure. But sometimes it happens. Sometimes teams are clever. The one thing I think maybe it was on Monday or it might have been another recording we did. The one thing I really don't, I think we're talking about the players and the players need to step up. They need to do this. They need to do that. What I want to see is this year in these six games, there is going to come a point where we face a tactical problem that happens on the pitch.
Yeah.
So it might not be that a team has set up this way from the outset, but they might make a change 10, 15 minutes in. Because not only are you against top-level players, you're against top-level coaches as well, who can make, you know, very, very subtle tweaks that change the nature of how the game goes. We need to be responsive to that as well and not just, you know, hope that we can work through it or play through it. We need to have that ability. And when I say we, the coaching team need to be able to look at it and say, how do we respond to that? What is our solution to that as well? So it's all about the players and them stepping up, and that's where the emphasis is. The coaching team will need to do the same as well, and they'll need to be really alert and alive to that, because the standard goes up across the board. And when you're playing these teams, I don't want the players to come off the park and played really well, but for the last 30 minutes of a game they weren't able to adjust to an extra midfielder or someone playing a little bit narrower and not make an adjustment. That's what you need to see. It needs to be the players step up, but the coaching staff, the manager, everyone needs to lift their levels and be sharp to it. Because if there's one very, very slight criticism you could have of that European kind of run last year, run might be slightly generous to be fair, but let's go with it, is that in those games, especially Bodo, it became apparent that it wasn't working, but we just kind of tried to play through. And that's very difficult to do. And I think sometimes players will look to the side and look for the manager to give them a little something, you know, have that kind of secret sauce to fix things, but it wasn't there. Hopefully this year, be a little bit more alive to it, a little bit more sharp, and try and give the players everything they need to hopefully finish, well, second in this group.
The first match day is the 6th, or the first match day is 6th and the 7th of September. We play Rangers the weekend before that, so... We play, and we're going to talk about Dundee United. We'll touch on Hearts as well, but we've got Dundee United this Sunday, then we've got Ross County on the Wednesday, then we've got Rangers on the Saturday, and then we've got the Champions League on the Tuesday or the Wednesday. Thick and fast, Chris. It's went from 0 to 100 very, very quickly.
Dingers, Parkers, and then the Berners. I don't know.
Beautiful.
Have you rehearsed that, or was that off the cuff?
I sat in the car, that's why I was late.
Yeah.
I sat in the car thinking, come on, you've got to have something. It's Champions League, man. The podcasters have got to step up their game as well, not just the players.
Tanners.
Don't fucking complicate.
Sorry. Chris, it's 0 to 100 very quickly.
Yeah, you've said this consistently over the last few weeks, Alan. That's what we've been used to, you know? Because you're going to fly into this and then we're going to hit the first international break. But I like that. I think the players probably will like that too. You know, have them coming thick and fast. I remember we played Rangers and then Barcelona in the Champions League in the Invincible Treble season. From joy to despair, if I remember that one correctly.
But was it not the other way around?
No, it wasn't.
That's going to be a quiz question at the end, by the way. He knows far too much.
Cynic Chronicles, I'm pretty sure we did the... are you talking about under Rodgers? Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm pretty sure we went to Barcelona and then we went to... We played Rangers on the Saturday and we played Barcelona on the Wednesday. We have a whole programme on it. It's called the Cynic Chronicles. But Chris, I'll check
talk
that.
Talk amongst yourself. Talk amongst yourself. Yeah, you can check that out. Let's hope I'm right. Put myself right off my stride there. Yeah, but I mean, it's... This is what happens when you're in the Champions League. You know that's the case. And to be perfectly honest, as long as we're playing well, I love that when you've got games.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to play on Sunday, Tannadice. Always a good place to go. Not that you can get tickets these days, but I love going to Tannadice. Dundee United are a great club. It's always a good away day. It's fairly kind to us. Straight into a game midweek, playing them again, and then into the Champions League. That's what you want as supporters, you know. The only time you don't want to see these games coming so thick and fast is when you aren't playing so well. Right now we are, you know, we haven't even touched on it. We've made another signing today. We're likely, you know, to strengthen the squad as well. Opportunities to see these guys come in and get game time as well. This is what it's about.
Of course, you're right, Chris. Everyone's shouting.
Thank
at
you.
Me.
Embarrassing from you. Yeah. I think just on the back of that, and as you talk about it now, I think that we've maybe said about it's been a very odd start to the season from our perspective because it has been a game a week. We've been kind of sitting twiddling our thumbs, you know, watching anything else during the week, whereas normally it's 2 days a week that are just completely dedicated to, you know, waiting for the game. I think as the manager will now probably, you would draw a line and almost say, look, the first 4 games of the season we've won well, great. That's your extended pre-season. Now the season starts, because you can do that. You know, you can look at it and say, now until the World Cup, it's all hands to the pump.
Yeah.
And I think players will love that. See, if you ask a professional football player, would you rather have Saturday into Saturday and train 5 days a week? Or actually, you've got Saturday, Wednesday, 2 of your sessions are recovery sessions. What would you prefer?
Yeah.
And it's not even, it's because it's all about games. And it means there's more game time for everyone. There's more opportunities for the guys who aren't playing. Players, you can make training sessions competitive, and there's loads of ways that you can do that. You know, you make the sessions more intense. You can add stuff to it. You see, if you offer players, you can play 2 games a week, and then the rest of the week's just you recovering, basically. Because that's what it will be now. All the work, and we've complemented it, the set piece work, the things that the little tweaks that I think we've seen improvements on, that now is probably going to have to get put to the back burner, because now it is recovery sessions after your games and prepare for the next game, especially for the first team players. Yeah. There will not be a lot of intense training time now. It will be game, recovery, pre-session, then game. Mm. And that's what players love. That's what they want. They don't want to be waiting 4 days and, you know, working hard at Lennox Town all week. They want to be playing. And now they've got it. So I think for Ange, for his coaching staff, you've got a good opportunity now. You've had a really good start to the season. You draw a line and say, by the way, I hope you've enjoyed it. It's good. Now the season starts, and this is what it feels like. So I think it's a good opportunity for him. And I can't wait for it, to be honest.
I'm the same. We're going to move on, but if you're tantalisingly excited about the Champions League and everything, if you go to thecynic.co, you can sign up for a monthly fee. We provide daily podcasts, although we'll be doing more than daily podcasts when everything kicks off. We do previews, we do reactions, we do opposition scouting. There's podcasts about various different things, features and everything. So check out thecynic.co if you want a lot more of us in your ear. And yeah, we'll get you through all the exciting Champions League stuff. Hax Abanovic has been confirmed.
Haxels.
Haxerino, Hackmeister General, Haxington Steel. Excited?
We throw back there.
Chris, we throw back. Excited about the signing, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, you know, cards on the table. I haven't seen the guy play at all, but I'm really excited.
5-year contract, are you surprised? Because there was lots of rumours about it was, you know, a loan to buy and all this sort of stuff. And, you know, reportedly, it's... He signed for them for, I think, over €5.5 million. Yeah. We're looking at 1.75 now and stuff.
We've been here before. Just be careful. Be very careful.
Yeah. Trent Law.
I mean, he's the right profile, isn't he? You know, he's a guy who's apparently been on our radar before he signed for Rubin Kazan. You know, he played in Sweden, a league of a decent standard, you know, kind of comparable to the Scottish Premier League. Went for a big fee, still quite young. Did play in England briefly for West Ham. It didn't work out there.
What did I say? Be careful.
Reminds me of Marian Schved. Actually, I am not excited about this signing in the slightest. No, I mean, it's, if we've tracked him for a while and we've now stumbled across another, you know, an opportunity where what's happened in Ukraine and in Russia has meant that we're able now to sign him up. You know, it's good. It's something that it's what you've talked about, Alan. You know, where if something lands in our lap, you know, a deal that looks as if it's exciting becomes available for us, then the club are prepared to take it. He's a guy, which they've given him number 9, but ostensibly, yeah, he can play across the front 3, which gives us more options. So in terms of the fact I've never seen him play, you know, his profile and where he's been and basically trusting the manager in terms of his signings thus far, I am excited to see what he can do. And the good thing about it is we've got this done a few days before the transfer window ends and there's potentially more coming in.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll get to that in a moment. Alan Haksabanovic, in regard to him, how quickly do you see him kind of coming in? Because as I said, we've got Dundee United on Sunday, then we've got Ross County, and then it's Rangers, and then it's Champions League. Do you think Ange will want him to have played minutes to have him potentially in the squad for the Rangers game, or do you think that comes too soon?
I think it's, well, we can look back at a couple of players and what Ange did last year. Now, I know last year was different. We had to get bodies in very quickly. He has had a tendency, Ange, to when a player comes in and he thinks he's an improvement on what's there, whether it be a starter or a player on the bench, he makes a decision. He doesn't string it out for 3-4 weeks and, you know, he just puts him straight in. And there probably is a spot up for grabs on that bench. So I presume that he would have trained today. If not today, then he would train tomorrow. I don't see any reason why Ange wouldn't think, if he's fit and he's available, that first session will define if he's in the squad for the weekend. Rangers is, you know, only a week away, but if he doesn't get in the squad this weekend, it'll be very difficult for him to get in the squad for Rangers. I wouldn't be surprised if Ange believes that the gulf in quality between him and, you know, let's be honest, it would be taking the spot of James Forrest on the bench.
Yep.
If he feels that he has a vast improvement and that he can offer him something, because you don't know how that game will go on Sunday. We could be scrambling for something in the last 10 minutes of that game, and you don't, what you want to have the best players available. So I think that first session will define. All the players will be watching it. That's what happens when a new player comes in. You always want to see how good they are. You know, what's his touch like? You're testing everyone. Does he have the mentality? Everything about it, it's like no other industry. It's so, you need to prove yourself in that first session. If he does well, there's a spot up for grabs at the weekend. You've got a midweek game at County, and then you've got, you know, Rangers the following week. He might not be involved. Maybe his fitness isn't there, but that first session will define it. So, you know, Andrew speak pre-match on Saturday, and if anyone's going, the question is, will he be in the squad?
I think we all looked at how we did not expect Aaron Moy to play so many games so early. And Chris, he seems to be the sort of first... Well, maybe not first, but he's one of the substitutions that kind of regularly comes on over the last couple of games. Ange seems to, I feel, as Alan says, if he likes somebody and he thinks they're ready to go, he'll throw them in.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's obviously worked with Moy, knows what he's capable of. Maybe he's trying to get him that sharpness that he wants to do, or maybe he already trusts him to see out some of these matches. Going back to the game at the weekend, there was a split difference of opinion amongst the support. Some people thought he came on and he did that very well, kind of close the match out and hold the ball. I didn't. But it's not really the point I'm trying to make here. What I think, Ange, you're exactly right. If he sees something in somebody or he knows they've got something, he will give them game time. I mean, even a guy like James McCarthy last season, who the support basically took one look at and said, you're not on it. You're nowhere near the football player you are. Your legs have gone. Postecoglou gave him game time. Because I imagine his attitude and things like that was spot on in training. Now, not huge amounts of game time, but 3-0 game, he brought him on for the last 15 so minutes to kind of help close the game out. There's other times where he brought him on.
He got a medal because he played so many games.
Exactly. And I think you're exactly right. If the manager trusts you, if the manager says you're professional and you're doing everything that you can, then he will give you game time. And I think they're two good examples of that.
On the... kind of, obviously there's just about a week left, less than a week left of the transfer window. Would you be looking for a six potentially, Alan, still to be brought in, or just a midfielder? Because as Chris says, you know, if you look at, you know, Callum McGregor, we could talk briefly about the Hearts game, but if McGregor is kind of suspended or just not available, it looks like it's probably going to be Moy. And with no disrespect to him, I personally just don't think he's going to be at that level just now. Maybe it might come, but what's your kind of thoughts on that position? Is it something you would like the club to do something about?
I would, and I think the club very early on in the window did want to make a big move there. Probably what would have been our biggest outlay of the window, including Carter Vickers and Jota, would have been Souza. But obviously it didn't pan out, which, you know, that happens. It's a very expensive deal in the end. But I think it highlighted that Ange would like an option in there. Now, I don't think that it's at all cost. It's a must buy. But if an opportunity did present itself, if there is someone further down that list of targets that can come in and do a role, then I think absolutely. And I would like it. You know, Moy, I think I said on Monday, we might be having a very different discussion about Moy in 3 months. He's not played football professionally in a long time. So he will take a bit of getting up to speed. And I think Ange just trying to do that. Adiguchi, again, obviously missing out due to injury, but even when he's not been, he hasn't been first choice, been a very late call on substitutions there. So I wouldn't be hanging my hat on, you know, him competing for a starting place, certainly not in the number six anyway. The trust that you need in your number six has to be, that's probably of primary importance. You can't put someone in there and hope that they do a job. It's so pivotal to everything. The defence, attack, everything comes through the six. They need to be on it. The direct traffic is so vitally important. That's why Cal McGregor, he trusts him in there, even though that wasn't his natural role. And I think with Moy, he trusts that if he asks him to do something, he can do it. But when you step up that for those six games, you might want a little bit more and give you the flexibility to push Cal McGregor into the eight. And then that opens up the playbook for you. I would love to see it. And when Samani was, you know, we were talking about Haksabanovic and immediately then said, we've still got time in the window, still time to go ahead. I would like to see his press. We've done a lot of good business. We've done a lot of good business, though, and at a rate. And I think that's one of the things that Ange has over any predecessors. He's been able to do really, really good business because of his knowledge of the J-League. And that those deals would have cost us far more. If it had been any manager from Europe or even MLS, anything like that at all, those deals would not have been doable, or other signings off the back of them wouldn't. So Celtic would get a big discount because of that.
Yeah,
so
that's a good point.
You know, I'm not a huge, I'll never be one probably that cheers on the chief executive, cheers on the board.
No,
I would be always kind of holding the feet to the fire, and it's just greedy. We want all the players, we'll always want more. But there is space for one more in this team. I think if we got Haksabanovic, that resolves a slight issue we've got in terms of wingers and quality of wingers. If we can get another midfielder in, I think it really would round off the squad nicely. But if we don't get it, I wouldn't say I would be disappointed, because it has to be quality. We don't need another jersey. We don't need another body.
Aye.
We need someone that would immediately come in. And like I mentioned in talking about Haksabanovic, you need someone that comes in and first session, everybody looks and thinks,
this guy,
that's a player. You know, that's what you need. You don't need someone that's coming in and, yeah, he can do a job at six, he can do a job at eight. You probably need someone that come in and go, people think right away, he is at the very minimum going to be competing for a starting spot.
Chris, you want to come
in? In that midfield area, I think there's room for somebody who's definitely a first team, nailed on, a box office signing. And I don't mean a name like Aaron Ramsey or even Ross Barkley. I don't mean a name, I mean box office, in terms of this guy is going to start for us now. Because they've only got McGregor there. Hitati, I think we initially thought he would. He went up and down, he was quite mercurial. That's not nailed on just now in that midfield three for us. And then it's a bit AN other with, you know, O'Reilly in Turnbull. Whereas I think if you've then got a six, this, you know, the six that we're all talking about that comes in, even if we push the boat out or whatever and get that player in, you've then got McGregor, who's also going to start probably in the eight as your captain, and then you've got a rotating cast of players who will be in that team based on merit. That for me would elevate the team hugely, but it's who that six or that box office midfield player is going to be. It has to be that level. It can't be a punt, or it can't be somebody, as you said, that can do a job here or can do a job there. It has to be somebody that comes in and just commands that midfield in a way even more so than somebody like McGregor could do. And I suppose that's the sort of player that needs to fall in your lap. That might not happen, or it's probably less likely to happen than it is, if you know what I mean. So,
do you think the club are actively trying to look for someone, though? Or do you think they are just waiting for something to drop in their lap on the last day of the window?
I mean, the Sosa signings is, or so the chase of Sosa, right? I mean, I'm assuming that you know a bit more, or the fact that, you know, I know we were linked and we were linked fairly heavily. I don't know how intensely we went after the guy and how we'd, you know, how much we'd pressed this one target, you know, a guy who we've seen as being on that level. I don't know. But I think Ange probably concurs with what we are saying here. It has to be that level. It has to be that standard. Otherwise, I don't need it, because he's got guys in that squad who can do a job to a certain level, but, and there's no point in bringing another one of them in. That's really what it boils down to. So I don't know if we're actively looking for it, but we're actively shopping in a much shallower pool in terms of the money that we can afford to spend and the quality of player we need in.
Alan?
Yeah, I think the assessment is pretty spot on. I think we're not going to spend the money that potentially would have been there earlier in the window is not probably going to be there. You know, you're not going to get an £8 million number six or number eight. I just don't think that's going to happen. What you might get, though, is someone, you know, probably less than about £5 million, certainly, but it might be someone who it could potentially be a loanee. It could be a younger player, maybe. I think there is interest in bringing that character of player in, because it hasn't been resolved. I know that when we were after Souza, that Aaron Moy wasn't in the squad, but Aaron Moy was a pretty easy deal to do.
Yeah.
And I think that doesn't resolve that issue. That's another one. It's an improvement on, you know, probably McCarthy in there when he's up to speed. Certainly if he's the player he was in 2017-18, he would be. But
he looked like a bald James McCarthy on Saturday.
So I don't think that problem's been resolved. And I think the club are definitely interested. I would think that area of the park, I think when you look, you do a squad assessment at the moment, we've tried to improve everywhere else in the park, but that midfield is pretty much as it was last year. You lost Tom Rogic, you brought in Aaron Moy. There's no, and I know O'Reilly and Hitati came in January, but there is, I think Samani's kind of run the numbers there a little bit. Similar to the winger situation, there's space for one more quality player. And if it's not a quality player, if it's not someone that comes in immediately impacted, you can get by, that's fine. But if you want to really compete and push the team on, which I think Ange definitely wants to do, because you might lose one of these players next year. You might lose a Hitati, an O'Reilly, a David Turnbull. One of these players could go. It's not hand to mouth. We talked about that last week. So that's what I think the club will do. Just lastly as well, I'd like to take issue with Samani saying Aaron Ramsey and not rolling the R in the way that Tom Comb did when
Ramsey.
One thing, I mean, on the number six, the guy that sits in there does all this, the caliber of player we're wanting. It's the new Victor Wanyama we want, isn't it? And I mean, I know that's, I'm not suggesting we sign Victor Wanyama now, but that was a guy who, for a short period of time with us, you can talk about what level he went on to play after us in terms of going to Spurs and things like that, but see, if you got somebody of the calibre and they had the skill set of Victor Wanyama, maybe a bit better passing, because I'm being greedy here, that would elevate the team hugely, absolutely hugely. That's the sort of thing. So you either need to go out and buy an established version of that, which is going to cost you a fortune, or you need to get pretty lucky like we did with him. But that's the sort of player in the middle of the park I think would make a huge difference to us.
Yeah, I think so too. I think as well, kind of what you said about Callum McGregor, let's say you did bring in a quality number six, the team kind of then does pick itself. I think it's, you know, the number six, Hitati and McGregor, and I don't think we necessarily have to, well, I mean, everyone's got the opportunity to kind of break in, but I like the idea that we know what our first team's going to be, as opposed to McGregor and Hitati plus one. And that's no disrespect or anything to Matt O'Reilly or anything, but
I think you'd have your favourite team. But there's a lot of real debate in there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's what you like. You like the fact that, right, okay, here's on paper how I think it will work out, but there's real... That's not one that you're going to the game and when the team sheet comes out, you think, unless it's a League Cup game at home, you're thinking, that's it. There is so much confidence. And I think you've got a little bit of that at the moment. Haksabanovic hopefully will improve that. But you're going up to the games at the moment, and people are really fighting over, you know, I want him in a team. And, you know, everyone always thinks they're right. You know, people that want to start GG think Kyogo's, it's obvious, and vice versa. But that then probably tells you that actually, and everyone here will have an opinion on that, and that's fine. That tells you that there's something there. there's nothing worse than going and thinking, fuck, if Kyogo's not available, we've got nothing.
Aye.
And we've got that in a number of positions. We've got it with Riley Turnbull, we've got it with the wingers, with Abada. That's a positive. We've got it with Jens and Starfelt. That's what you want to get to, that level that see if next year one of these star players, one of these young guys who've done really well here, there's an offer to move abroad. It's not a case of, fuck, we're losing him. That is a position that we have been in since. It's been hand to mouth. One player goes and we bring another one in. You kind of get the position now where actually, you know, you could lose a player and you can handle it. That's what I like to see, and that's ideally where we want to get to. It doesn't need to be one player, one position. We need more.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Good point, Chris.
Do you know, I've forgotten what I was going to say. No, again, come back to talking about the six as well. See, if you've got somebody with that stature and composure in the middle of the park. See, you've got a guy like Haksabanovic, who, or Haxi, as I like to call him, talked about him playing in the 10 position, right? So if you, I mean, if, presuming you played him there, you know, a midfield of Hatate and McGregor, potentially a bit lightweight in there, it could be, you know, I'm talking about at a higher level, you know, whereas I think if you've got something a bit more solid in there, you can potentially get away with playing somebody like Haksabanovic, who then just focuses on one thing, which is trying to create chances as opposed to doing a lot of the kind of legwork in there. So these key, some of these key signs can make different choices, sorry, can create different choices over different areas of the park. So yeah, that is pretty exciting talking about this, yeah. You know, just in terms of how it can switch it up. And, you know, you would like to have a favoured, you know, 11, but it's good that there's arguments about it. People go, nah, Riley's going to, you know, or Turnbull can, and that's the sort of position that you want to be at. So
I think the reason we're talking about the six so much is just because the drop off between McGregor and the next is really big.
That's probably the point. I think you nailed it. Any other position, I think we can probably manage.
Yeah.
I don't think if Callum McGregor was to drop out for whatever reason, the drop off to whoever comes in, Moy, Adiguchi,
McCarthy,
you're having to put someone else in there, or you're having to then take something. And the six is so important. You can probably stick a winger on, and you know, you can coach him through a game. You can't do that with a number six. You need to be the most intelligent player in the park to play number six.
See, the thing about the six as well, and you've touched on this a few times, Alan, listening on the agenda, about the weaknesses in McGregor's game at the number six. Now, because he's our captain, and because he probably is one of, if not the most intelligent player we've got, there's an assumption or a general feeling that he's untouchable in that six role. Whereas if you do make a significant improvement there, you're then going to probably get better out of McGregor as well as then improving that. And the way that would then elevate the team is absolutely huge, you know.
That's why I think it's such a key, if we did bring someone of quality in that one position, you know, I know, Alan, you're saying you wouldn't be completely disappointed if it didn't happen. But see, if it did happen, I just think my confidence levels for this group, for example, in the Champions League, I start to think, and I think that spreads through the whole support.
Yeah, I think it's, and on that exact point, I love Cal McGregor. I think he's the most reliable player in the team. He's probably the most intelligent player in the team. The way that he moves seamlessly with the ball, without the ball, it's just exceptional. He's a great, great talent. But what I would like to do is put him in that number eight again, where he's succeeded his whole career. It then takes away some of the elements of his game that aren't his strengths. Tackling, breaking up play, there is not his strengths. He's not a leader. And when I say leader, I mean in terms of actual numbers. He doesn't pick up the loose balls. He's not an interceptor. He's not a great tackler. See if you can take some of those, and it's not to say that putting him in number eight means he doesn't need to do any of that. He's just doing it higher up the park, and I think that's where he's better. I've always seen Callum McGregor in eight, and his best years at Celtic have always been in number eight. He did incredible last year, but I think what we are trying to do now, and clearly the conversation tonight has largely been about stepping up and stepping up to Champions League levels. It's ruthless stepping up those levels.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't have any worry about Callum McGregor on the ball in there, but we're not going to have the ball anywhere near as much as we do domestically. So you need someone who does have that ability, that intelligence, that strength to break up play. We're not suggesting for a second we want to have a Luddite in number six. We want well, with the profile of player we're talking about, we basically want Rodri from Man City, so unless we get him. But we want a player that can do, that is comfortable in the ball, that can play forward, do all those things, but also is naturally defensively minded and that wants to protect. Callum McGregor has always been an attacking player in my mind. He did an incredible job last year, but when you're talking about these Champions League games, I think the number six, I think it'll be much more difficult. And I think if you put him in the eight, I think you're gaining so much by putting him in there, and you'd be gaining at six. Exactly like you said, you're gaining in two places. So it's not a criticism of him whatsoever. It's, in my opinion, it's just that reality. And I think if you're looking to improve the team, I think that's an area you could definitely do it.
Yeah. Rodri.
Let's go.
That'll
Let's
do.
Go.
Mark Lowell, time to step up, son.
Celtic defeated Hearts 2-0 at the weekend, of course. We're not going to touch on that as much this week because we want to kind of go to the Dundee United game. But just quickly, Chris, your kind of thoughts on the game overall?
It was a bit of a disjointed performance. I don't think anybody had a particularly good game. Nobody was horrific either. Really, it was just Hearts came to set up and spoil. You've seen that, you know, obviously they've got, they're playing tonight, aren't they?
Yeah.
Right. Wee score check, hopefully they'll get it. you know, they made some changes with this tie in mind and they came on, but they did not come. I mean, the keeper was time-wasting from 3 minutes in. You know, they were coming in hard to tackle, and so when you're up against a side like that, it's difficult. Nothing each. Boo. Notwithstanding, I just thought that we didn't really get going. We were quite lethargic. I think the manager kind of said that. At the same time, we never really looked like we were conceding. I don't think they had a shot on target. Their entire kind of game plan was to come and spoil, play aggressively, and maybe hopefully get some break off. So it's one of those games that, we're using this cliche, that you just take it and you leave and you forget all about it. You know, these are some of the games that we maybe talk about coming a bit later in the season. We're talking about getting some momentum, but I think we managed the game fairly well, even though we got the second goal quite late. Generally speaking, I don't think we were that troubled. It's just one that you go, tick, forget all about it. But performance-wise, you know, we'll play much better this season.
Yeah. Alan, can I have brief thoughts? We've covered this week on the cynic.co, so just your brief thoughts.
Yeah, I think pretty much the same. Hearts, it felt different at the game, but it was because we lost a little bit of control in that second half. Didn't dominate the ball the same way. It was a bit more back and forward, but unruffled at the back. Hearts never really created enough. And then towards the end, obviously the sending offs just took the sting out of what could have been a nervy last 5 minutes. So, yeah, given that I say the season starts this week and pre-season's now done, we just put it behind us and go on to Sunday.
Yep, absolutely. We're going to go to Stats Corner and get a little bit more from the Hearts game with Christian Wolf. It's Stats Corner. I'm Christopher Gallagher, and as always, I'm joined by Christian Wolf, and we are going to look over Celtic's victory over Hearts from a stats and possibly tactics point of view. Christian Wolf, hello, my friend. How are you?
I'm great here in the Stats and Tactics Corner.
Give me your general stats overview of the victory over Hearts at the weekend.
Oh, tell you what, Celtic, let's start with XG. Celtic 3.4. Hearts 0.1. But the interesting thing around that, I think, is at 90 minutes, Christopher, it was Celtic 2.4. So actually, a whole XG came in injury time. And actually, the first half was 1.1 and still 0.1 to Hearts. So it's very much a game where a lot of the chances came the second half and a lot of the high-quality chances came even in injury time.
Yeah, obviously that goal by Giakoumakis at the end added a lot to, as you say, the XG. Just want to ask, as always, did Celtic perform the way they should have? You know, we've covered the review, which was fantastic this week with Christopher Bowd. We talked about it on the agenda. Did we perform to our maximum stats-wise?
Yeah, Celtic's second highest XG created, but actually the fewest shots so far with 16. Aberdeen was 18 shots, so the two games with the fewest shots this season have both been the home games. But second highest XG in total, the lowest XG conceded of the season, which is kind of the stat story of the game was that Hearts created absolutely nothing. And in the end, Celtic created quite a bit. I mean, XG difference of 3.3 is way above the average from last season. You know, it was 2.4. The Hearts game at home in May, the Celtic won 4-1. There was a XG difference of 2.3. So again, it's the numbers are good, Christopher. In terms of possession, it is very similar. All the kind of territory stats, nothing really out of the ordinary. As I said, similar to the 4-1 in May, slightly more possession, but yeah, very much as expected. Very much overall comprehensive stat victory.
Yeah, absolutely. In regards to how we, from a tactics point of view, did we do anything different? I mean, I think it was very close. We did the reaction straight after the game, and I think we were quite balanced and quite positive about it. But during that game, towards the end, we were only 1-0 up. Hearts didn't have anything. They were very, very impotent, specifically when they got into the final third. But, you know, we want to be taking more of these chances that we're creating. And I know that will come, but is there anything around that that you want to kind of get off your chest?
I think the main difference from the other games, Celtic set up. They play a certain way and they have success with that. What Hearts tried to do was different than the last two opponents, you know, Ross County and Kilmarnock, because they were both heavily man-marking. Whereas Hearts did, I guess, two things quite differently. They kind of set up a bit more in a 2-4-4 block in their organised defence. So instead of the one striker shuttling a little bit between the Celtic centre-back, they mostly had both Boyce and Jalen were that kind of front press. One of them had always had an eye on Callum McGregor, but it wasn't really that same kind of pattern where, I guess, Ross County and Kilmarnock, Jenso, Cameron Carter-Vickers could pretty much just unpressured go up in the opposition half. That didn't really happen here. You know, there was a bit more of aggressive press. And also behind that kind of two in the front press, Hearts structure was a bit more zonal than man marking. So while they were pretty aggressive, if they had a player in their zone, they were a lot better, or at least more willing, to let a player go if they changed positions. For example, if Greg Taylor came inwards, Alan Forrest usually left him for Haring. And the other way, if Callum McGregor went out to the left, Liam Boyce might be a follower, Haring would follow. So there was a little bit more zonal marking, a bit more about Hearts protecting the space and not letting Celtic come out as much. So a lot of what happened in the first half especially was, you know, Celtic trying to find slightly different solutions to slightly different problems that had been. And the reason why Hearts tried to set up like that is obviously you have those two strikers more than one, is to prevent the strikers from stepping out and also try and keep, as actually Eddie mentioned rightly at reaction straight after, try to keep Callum McGregor from picking up the ball in the middle. And the zonal behind that, again, is kind of, it's more about protecting the space rather than protecting, covering a player. So making sure even with that Celtic movement, you have the space covered and you don't think too as much about the man as more about just protecting the space. So an interesting set. I mean, again, Celtic kind of had to face a slightly different challenge defensively.
I think there's been a lot made of Rio Hatate coming on, and I personally think he was excellent. He really rejuvenated the midfield a little bit. Is that true of the stats, of the tactics? Does it come across like that?
It was, for me, actually, it was kind of a similar pattern to the Kilmarnock game, in that Celtic start really well. You know, that there's, on the review, we go through 3-4 examples of what Hearts tried to do. They didn't manage, you know, Callum McGregor early on getting the ball behind the two defenders. Greg Taylor was picking up in the middle. There was some nice kind of movement. They're getting away from that kind of zonal defense. And the goal itself, again, really nice example of that. If you slack off a little bit against a Celtic team, it's not a big mistake, but they'll punish it really, really quickly. And what happens is that Peter Haring kind of jumps out at Greg Taylor, who actually doesn't get the ball from Cameron Carter-Vickers. So he kind of misses David Turnbull sneaking in behind him. And David Turnbull, actually quite a nice run, he picks up the ball. But when he picks up the ball, the centre-back Riles jump out at him, which again creates space, the space he left actually, And then, you know, ball into Maeda, when Kyoga gets the ball, there's only one Hart centre-back in there. So again, not a huge defensive mistake from Hart, but when Celtic's on their best, when they're on the literally on the ball, I guess, they'll punish that, and they punish it quick. Because I thought the start was really good, but then as we beat Kilmarnock, there was like a 25-minute period in Kilmarnock game after the first goal. Same here, like, Celtic kind of struggled a bit more. Not struggle, but they kind of... Some of the things Hart meant to cause issues for, they manage. So, you know, I think what happens is, you know, the centre-backs, first of all, they can't step out with the ball as much. It was more difficult for them to find McGregor and also the fullbacks. And it kind of resulted in, if you look at some of the pass maps, we go through them on the review as well, a lot of passes sideways and out wide from the centre-backs. And if you look at kind of Stephen Welsh's pass map against Aberdeen in the first game, you know, he's very good at passing the ball straight forward between the lines into the half space. That hardly happens from Moritz Jens at all in this game. And that's not because Stephen Welsh is a superior passer of the ball to Moritz Jens. It's because it was more difficult to find players for Moritz Jens, that there wasn't those kind of options. And there was an issue sometimes, I think, with the movement. So there was kind of fewer overloads, as we call them, as Celtic managed to get a lot of players in one area. And I think especially the kind of after the goal in the first half, those kind of movements and became kind of predictable. Celtic's game was a little more predictable. And I think in a way Celtic kind of got stuck in a normal pattern where the fullbacks stayed out wide and the two number eights kind of stayed on their side in that kind of slightly towards the middle, and it kind of stuck in those traditional positions, not managing to do that kind of movement. Now, you mentioned Rio Hatate there, and I think if you look at kind of David Turnbull, he, compared to Rio Hatate in the Aberdeen game, he receives the ball very little out wide. He doesn't receive it as much high up the pitch as Hatate. And I think you kind of misses, see, when Hatate goes those different movements, be it deep or wide or high, it kind of creates that domino effect of movement. And Hatate is very good at attacking the space behind the defense as well, particularly between the fullback and the center back of the opponents. And I think with David Turnbull, he's not really that type of player. He'd rather receive the ball facing the goal 30 yards out rather than make those kind of run intensely and all the time. So I think overall, I think Celtic's kind of movement in the latter part of the first half just kind of got a little bit predictable. And it was kind of, there wasn't lots of chances created in that first half afterwards.
In regards to, I don't want to be a negative Nelly, but like in regards to causes for concern, would that be kind of a little bit predictable when we don't necessarily have our key players in place?
Yeah, I mean, in one way we're being picky here, because this is a game that Celtic do control.
Yeah.
Right? And it's, you know, even with those, I think you do miss Hatate's movement when he's not there. I think what we talked about on the review is maybe that David Turnbull is maybe an unfair comparison with Hatate, because I think he's probably more of a competitor to O'Reilly. He's probably more of a similar type to O'Reilly. So you kind of maybe, when you have Turnbull and O'Reilly in there, and some games that you won't get that kind of same movement and like intensity in the runs and pushing up. So if you had kind of like a Hatate light, which I guess Idiguchi was kind of maybe meant to be, it's like a bit more of that, it's maybe that would have worked a bit. So, but yeah, it shows that if the opposition prevents the centre-backs from coming out and it prevents Celtic space and time in their half, obviously it's going to be more difficult. It does then demand that Celtic are right on top of the movements and they do that. But again, Celtic keep doing what they're doing. And I think, you know, even though a lot of chances comes late on, still in total control. I mean, Hart is not really getting out of the half much and they don't create much. But it's overall a good game, but it's kind of, yeah, I think it was that kind of movement. It was the movements were too predictable too often.
Finally, let's wrap up. Nice, short and sharp. what is it we can, is there anything we can take away from this game in regards to positive or negative things we can change? Is it kind of a case of just keep up doing what we're doing? Any worries?
No, I mean, it's, I think Hatate will be a boost when he comes back. I think on the review we talked a lot about how there's really 14 players in the rotation now because Gigi, Moy and Abadez all come on in all four games. And we kind of look a little bit how that coming on in the 70th minute with that kind of game state, as we call it, you know, everybody's a bit more tired, you know, the kind of tactical plans kind of going out the window suits Gigi to a T, as we say. Okay, he scores goals, but he also gets to a lot of chances. Whereas the other two, Abada and Moy, I guess, for me, haven't had the same impact when they come on. So I think, you know, our friend Haksabanovic coming in, it would add to that kind of having an extra option coming on or rotating. So I think that would be good. I can end with a stat.
Yes.
I know I've had lots of stats, but I thought this was a pretty interesting stat. Celtic have scored with the first and last shot in both the last two games. Not only that, they also scored with their last shot, actually the two last shots, against Ross County. So in the last three games, they scored with their last shot.
Fantastic stuff. Christian Wolf, pleasure as always.
My pleasure.
Thanks to Christian Wolf, of course, for Stats Corner. There's plenty of more stats and tactical breakdowns on thecynic.co, so check us out. Even if you just want to go to the website just to see, there's plenty of free stuff as well. Plenty of free features and writing you can check out and enjoy.
Do you think we could send Christian to Scotch Corner to record Stats Corner? I don't actually know where Scotch Corner is, but...
Northeast England.
Aye. Send him there to record Stats Corner.
It was also a horse... That Winston is still getting bet on.
Scotch Corner.
Good. Yeah, lovely.
We can put the three of them together. We'll come up with something. We'll let Christian know where he's to record from next week.
Alan, if you
want a horse in Scotch Corner.
Yeah, Alan, if you want to take care of this project, that's fine. You'll be team leader.
Fantastic expense to what will be a pretty shit joke.
For you, essentially.
Just of course, absolutely.
We take on Dundee United on Sunday. It's a 12 o'clock kickoff. How are you feeling about this game, Chris? Because, as we say, it's the start of a really... This is the kind of start of a really busy period because we go to Dingwall on the Wednesday as well. Thoughts, feelings going into the game?
Confident. I mean, notwithstanding Jack Ross's very small moment in the sun when they beat Alkmaar at home. I think we were recording that night. And
yeah,
full of praise for them. The wheels have come off a wee bit from the after that. But notwithstanding, I touched on it earlier, Tannadice is always a ground where I'm confident going. I think it's been quite kind to us over the years. I think we're in a good run of form. Wee bit disjointed against Hearts, but I think that was largely to do with how they set up and approached the game. So right now, there's not any team that I'm particularly wary of is going up against domestically. Obviously, next week it's going to be a far bigger challenge, and I'll eat my words if it doesn't turn out that way on Sunday, but it's just another game I'm looking forward to. Away from home, I think we can express ourselves a wee bit better than we can at home. I'm looking forward to it, and I'm fairly confident that we'll get the 3 points.
Since the AZ game, they've lost four in a row. They lost to Livingston, they lost to, obviously, Alkmaar, they get spanked, then they get absolutely gubbed 4-1 by Hearts. But the biggest surprise would be the defeat against St Mirren. Alan, is it one of those where this is a team that might come back and is a wounded dog and all that, or are they just shit?
Well, I'm not going to say they're just shit because we played them on Sunday. Also, I'll take a slightly different approach. Dundee United always have the ability to step up at home. They do. I mean, they did it against AZ. They don't need to play well throughout the season. They might not finish third, fourth, but they do have the ability on one-off games to play well. I think they beat Rangers at Tannadice last year.
Yeah.
Obviously, we drew with them towards the end of the season.
Mm.
They do have the ability to play well over, and that's over successive managers. They have that ability. So I'm always wary of teams that are on really, really bad runs of form. Saman is right, though. There's a clarity of approach for us that means we know what we are doing. And I think largely irrespective of who we're playing, that doesn't change, and that's really positive. I wouldn't take the last four results and say, though, that then means that we're going to go and hand our ass to them, which I would absolutely love, clearly. But I think it's about being aware that they have the ability to step up. They've got good players, they've got good experience in there. I do like the fact that they're probably not going to squeeze us as high. They maybe don't have the same legs right up the top of the park. So I think that helps. I think the defenders should be able to bring the ball out, we should be able to pass through. But it's that defending deep. They do have ability. There's good players in that side. I think everyone's obviously aware of Levitt, but they've got good quality in that side. So they do have the ability to step up on over 90 minutes. Yeah. Forget their context of the season. They might not string results together continually, but they have the ability to do it. So it's just for us, it's about that clarity of approach and make sure we go and we've started well in a lot of games recently. You know, you think of Aberdeen, Kilmarnock, even the weekend against Hearts, scoring early, that makes a huge difference. Yeah. So if you can continue that, then, you know, then you can start thinking about, you know, cricket scores and such like.
Because the midfield three, you know, Levitt, McGrath and Harkes, at this, and then, you know, Watt, Fletcher and Middleton, they are good players. I mean, I was looking at, I know someone who's a Dundee United fan, he was basically saying that the rumours were rife among their support that Jack Ross had walked this week or had been pushed.
I was going to make a joke there about his first steps, but just kept it back.
Well, for the best. Fucking hell. But, you know, they've got good players. There may be a bit of low in confidence in regards to, well, I was going to say what our approach should be, but we know what our approach is going to be. Personnel, you look at, you know, we've talked about, you know, Hatate obviously came on as a substitute. Is it likely that he'll start? We've talked about Aaron Moy. If you want him to be up to speed, just to be available down the line, you're going to have to play him at some point. He's going to have to start some game. Maybe not this game, maybe the game during the week. How would you line up, Chris?
I just feel as if I'm picking the same team every single week just now. And he's not going to do that, I think. I think there is going to be a wee bit more rotation. I think we might get a surprise. I think he might go with Moy at the weekend.
In the six or in the eight? Would it be...
Got to be one of them, Chris. We'll go for the six. I don't even know if he'll do that, but I don't think he's going to... I think he is going to make changes, and I'm going to make that bold prediction and make it sound as if I've got the skinny on what's going down in the dressing room. So I'm going to say that he's going to start Moy in the six. This is going to be the bowling goalie out of nowhere move. So, yeah, that'll move Kyle McGregor forward into the eight, and... Magic.
Would you see Starfelt coming back in, or would it be Jens?
Mindful of the games coming up, it really comes down to whether or not the manager trusts Jens enough on the basis of what he's seen, or if Starfelt, he doesn't want to rush Starfelt back. I would guess that he might start Starfelt just because I think he probably sees him and Vickers as being our Champions League and in terms of the game against them first choice partnership. So I think you might see Starfelt starting Sunday, Wednesday, and then hopefully getting them a wee bit kind of rid of that ring rust before we play against them.
Do you agree with that, Alan? Those, and how would you line up?
I think that the decision that he makes on Sunday with the centre-halves probably is your decision that you make for your centre-halves for the Rangers game. I probably find it unlikely that he would play Starfelt three games in a week, but you use the Dundee United game. That's the game, I think, that you say... And he doesn't shuffle the centre-halves around too much, although, admittedly, we've not really had, you know, great options in there to, you know, the challenging the starters. So I think it'll be interesting. I thought he'd have done it last week, which makes me a little bit unsure now. So that's what you're asking me. I really don't know, I suppose. I'm shiting out.
But see,
I really don't know what he'll do.
If he's going to play Starfelt, you said there, like, he's not going to play him three games in a row, but he's not going to bring in Starfelt on Saturday, or Sunday, sorry, and then, like, drop him for Wednesday, is he?
I think you can, because it's, you know, he obviously does like what he's seen from Jens, and as a cup game as well, and you know, Jens has already played up at County. I don't think you'd be concerned about that.
I guess, yeah.
It's for me, I would go Starfelt because I think we have you at the Champions League. I really like Jens. I've been really encouraged, and I think he can challenge. I just think the type of game that we have coming up within like the next 3 weeks might just be a little bit too much from too soon, given the season he had last year. Just maybe a little bit too many touches at times at defence. I think the type of teams that you're going to face, you need to be absolutely sure and confident. And I think he's maybe a wee bit away from that. But it's not to say that match day 3, 4, 5 in the Champions League, that might be different. But it's a live position. I would go Starfelt. I think he probably 60-40 he does. But I thought he would have done it last week. I was convinced he would have made the change last week and he didn't. So,
Chris?
In terms of Starfelt and playing the games, I actually think he might do that. And the reason being is Starfelt seems to me the sort of player that needs to warm into a team. You know, quite often when he came on last weekend, he immediately looked uncomfortable until he kind of started to bed himself into the game. Yeah. I think that's the type of player he is. So I think you might get, he does that, he just kind of goes Sunday, Wednesday, Sunday. And it might be Vickers that drops out because he's played games. You know, you might find Jens getting some game time up at Ross County. You said he's played it. You know, I wouldn't rule something like that out. But, you know, I just get the feeling that he will want Starfelt and Vickers back in for those big games. And this week will be the opportunity to bed him in. If he doesn't, I would be as surprised as you were, you know, that he wasn't started last week. But I would be shocked if that wasn't the case.
I think the one that I would maybe, if you are thinking about a change, a little bit out of the box. Last year, he did go to Anthony Ralston a lot for some of these kind of difficult away games.
And he's not played a lot this season.
He's not played a lot. And also, we are now getting into the period of two games a week. And it's the fullbacks that will feel that strain.
The most, yeah.
I'm not saying he starts on Sunday, but he did go to him a lot in some of these really difficult, tight away games last year where you feel that that is a time to make that change. Juranovic has looked really good. But he trusts Anthony Ralston. He trusts what he can do. I expect he'll start one of these games this week.
I thought he would have started a game before now. I think we might have been both of us. We'd predicted a couple of weeks ago. In fact, it was a Ross County game. He might go with Ralston because, well, he's had an impact again in some of these games. Getting away at the Tony Macaroni Arena, you know, some of these games where it's going to be tough, aggressive, gritty when you need to grind it out. So.
Do you think that's a sign, though, that Ange is now, everything that happened last season has almost been put to bed because of circumstance now?
I think it's just there's not been enough games. Right. I think you need to, you want to play your what you believe are your starters. You want them. You let them get into form, then you start, you know.
Giving people other opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think because we've not the two games a week, you want to make sure that those starters are, they're fit, they're sharp. Then you start thinking about it. But I think I do think Ralston will get one this week. And he has. It's been away games where he's tended to do it, where he feels that he can offer you a little bit something different. Yeah. Those free kicks are a little bit more difficult. He's obviously a bit more physical than Juranovic, not as good technically. I think it might be, it'll either be Dundee United or Ross County. I think you'll see him.
Yeah, I think it'll be Ross County. Good, great stuff. Obviously, Dundee United game's on the Sunday. We'll have a reaction straight after that. And also on Sunday, Celtic FC Women continued their league campaign against Spartans last week, 4-0 victory. I spoke to Claire Wild, who is the host of the Celtic Women's Football Show, which is released every Wednesday on thecynic.co. Here's what Claire had to say. I'm joined now by Claire Wild, who is the host of the Celtic Women's Football Show, which drops every Wednesday at midday. Hello, Claire. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you very much. It's nice to be on the weekly again.
Normally, it's your co-host, Lorenzo Bicitti, that you are sitting speaking to. But you've got me this week. Do you want to go through what you've been talking about this week?
A few things. One of the things that is slightly non-Celtic related was that it was UWCL, the sort of mini tournaments to go into the next stage of the Champions League for the women. And seeing as we didn't finish in the top two, we weren't in it. But Rangers went through and Glasgow City didn't.
So, yeah.
To cut a long story short. So we had a bit of a chat about what that means in terms of, you know, what we wanted the outcome to be, because obviously it's good for Scottish football to have a team, but we probably would have preferred that it was Glasgow City.
Yeah, hopefully. I just wanted Rangers to get scudded in every way possible. There's news of the Celtic captain getting called up for Scotland again, which is great and positive.
Yeah, Kelly Clark getting another call up for Scotland, which is great. I mean, everyone who's kind of following it even a bit, most people know Kelly Clark. She's been around this squad for so long. So it's great to see her get that recognition. We had a bit of a chat about the kind of the fact that there aren't very many Celtic players in the squad, that most of the players from Scottish clubs, actually, I think at the moment are from Rangers. And then obviously you've got Scotland squad players coming from Europe and the States and stuff who are playing over there. But kind of whether there's a bit of a gap in that middle section. We've got a lot of young players coming through, a lot of young Scottish talent. But yeah, it's an interesting debate, but probably one for another time.
Yeah, and as we know, I'm sure a lot of people will know Kelly from the coverage on Celtic TV. Certainly the kind of Celtic fans abroad will know that she's been... Well, she's not on it as much now, but she was on it as a pundit, and she was great, great insight. Celtic itself, greatest football team of all time.
Of course.
We are currently top of the league.
No, we are not currently top of the league.
We
were for about 3 days.
That's right, yeah.
But yesterday, Glasgow City and Rangers both won their midweek games. They were playing midweek games because they had the Champions League games.
Right.
So we basically were top of the league because we had games in hand.
But we are... joint top of the league, but just it's a goal difference.
Difference that's separating, and I think technically we're joint second now with Glasgow City. I think we're on the same number of goals, but basically the top three teams, which would be City, Rangers and Celtic, have all taken 3 points from all three games they've played so far.
Full points, terrific. Goal difference could be crucial, as we're very aware. But this week on the show, you talked about the Spartans game at the weekend. Tell us a little bit about that.
It was a 4-0 victory. It was good. It was at Excelsior. They changed the time of that to not coincide with the men's game, so that was exciting because I got to dash off straight away and see if I could make two Celtic games in a day, which I did, which was good. The actual game itself, we probably should have scored more. As a general overview, we had a lot of chances that were missed. However, we still put 4 goals past them. 2 of them were penalties, which were kind of quite... I think Spartans got quite frustrated in their defence, which kind of drew the fouls that led to those penalties. The goals from open play, it was Clarissa Larissy and Taylor Otto, who had made her first competitive start. So that was good for her.
Yeah, she's just a new signing, just in the door, yep. But she's went straight into the team and she got player of the match and such. So really positive. Yeah. Obviously, that was the opportunity for you to go to the Celtic FC women's team and then go straight to Celtic Park for the men's team. There was the opportunity to watch both games this weekend as well, because the men are at Dundee United at midday, yeah. And then
K Park for the game against Motherwell. That's where Celtic used to play, so it's going to be a nice blast from the past. I'm feeling quite nostalgic about going back to K Park, even though it wasn't that long that we were there. But it'll be good to play Motherwell. But Motherwell, also just worth noting that sort of we should definitely be beating them. We should be beating most teams in this league on a week-by-week basis. Obviously, difference being Rangers and Glasgow City. But Motherwell have had a really good start to the season. They had a draw, then they lost to Glasgow City, but Glasgow City only scored a winner in the 97th minute. So they held them for 97 minutes, which is really impressive. And they also beat Hibs.
Yeah.
Which was a surprising result. You'd have said it was a surprising result last season.
But not so much this season. This is a league where, and I know we joke, but goal difference genuinely could be crucial. Because, you know, if we keep going the way we're going and we keep performing the way we're performing, then it might come down. It'll come down to the big games against Glasgow City and against Rangers, but also it will be a kind of shootout in regards to goal difference.
Yeah, so like the games on Wednesday, it was 2-0 in the Rangers game. They were playing Hearts, but some of the smaller teams who've just been promoted, Glasgow City were playing Dundee United, who are definitely a much less professional, much less experienced kind of setup, and I think the final result was 7-0.
Yeah.
So it's weird that even though we put 4 past Spartans, like when we're missing those chances, it feels more important than it might on other games or in other leagues or in other situations.
Yeah, absolutely. So game this weekend, Celtic taking on Motherwell at K Park.
4 o'clock.
4 o'clock kickoff. Get along. The Dundee United game's at midday, so there's opportunity to go to both. But the Celtic Women's Football Show drops every Wednesday at midday.
Yep. We're always there. Well, unless there's an international break or something.
They're there and they're always there unless there's an international break or something. Claire Wilde, pleasure as always. We'll speak to you soon.
Thank you.
Thanks to Claire. Claire and Lorenzo are part of the Celtic Women's Football Show, which records which is released every Wednesday on thecynic.co, along with a host of other podcasts, daily podcasts. Check it out. Okay, so we are going to finish with I've got my wee sheet here, can't let Chris see it. Celtic in the Champions League quiz. We've got six questions. There's three questions each. If there's a tie at the end, we've got a tiebreaker question. Some of them are easy and hard. So it's very important. Has anyone got a coin? Shit, I forgot to bring my coin. Chris, you got a coin?
Alan can go first.
Oh, okay, Alan, you want to go first?
Yes. I feel like I'm being set up here, but yes.
I can flip the jammy dodger for it.
What do you think of the jammy dodgers, out of curiosity?
Steady biscuit.
Yeah, vegan.
Good, aye. Yeah. An upgrade on some of the previous biscuits, but...
Let's
not go behind the cup, shall we say.
Big bit of animal fat in the middle of that would just spice it right up, man. I tell you that.
Scum.
Delicious.
Right, Alan, you can go first. Okay.
Celtic number four. Sorry, you said I was to pick a number, did you not?
No. I was just
I'm definitely being set up.
Yeah. Okay, so question one.
Been fitted
Celtic
up.
In the Champions League. Okay, so question one. Who scored Celtic's first goal in the Champions League group stages? Who scored Celtic's first goal in the Champions League group stages? I actually... Yeah.
Mm.
It's a tough one because it's that first goal. Talk us through your thinking, Alan. You can talk us through your thinking. That's
I'm just
fine.
Trying to think of the team. It's the order of games that's going to cause me a problem. I am going to go for... I'll go Henrik.
Unfortunately. Do you know, Chris?
Stan Petrov?
Stelian Petrov. You don't get the point, though.
Why not?
Because it's his question. There's no Stelian.
Because I fucked up for the both of us.
Yeah.
Because I took out the King, so it was thereafter.
Yeah. He'd scored the free kick against Dundee the weekend before.
Famous Champions League game.
He scored the free kick and then he took the same free kick. Why such an arsehole?
As soon as you add an element of competition in it, I will immediately be a prick.
Yeah, yeah. It was against Juventus in the 3-2 games, obviously our first Champions League game, 18th of September 2000.
I call that the 2-2 game, Chris, because I refuse to acknowledge that.
Yeah,
cheating bastard.
Bloody Italians, eh?
I'm into it, the 2-2 game.
Don't think he was Italian, the player that scored.
It's not a point.
Amoruso?
Eh.
He was.
Amoroso.
Amoroso.
Question number two is for Chris Sormani. Okay, so that was who scored Celtic's first goal in the Champions League group stage. Who scored Celtic's last goal in the Champions League group stage?
It doesn't matter if you know.
Alan knows.
It doesn't matter if you know.
Alan knows. He loves it.
So, who did we... I can't even remember who we played in the last.
Last group.
Why is my mind going blank? Who scored the last goal?
Last goal. It's a good question, isn't it?
It's a great question. Can see what you've done.
Yeah. So, Andy, give me your thinking. Come on.
Cal McGregor.
It was Mr. Dembele against PSG in the corner when we scored.
Did you know that?
Yeah.
Yeah. 22nd
I remember it fucking vividly because I thought,
I remember the goal vividly. It's just that whole match day thing in the head.
Alan Edgar, question three. How many Champions League group stage goals did Chris Sutton get?
Champions League group stage.
So just in the Champions League group stage.
Four.
Incorrect. I'll let you, if you whatever guess.
Three.
Six.
Six. Fuck.
Two against Juventus, two against Lyon and Anderlecht, and then one against Barcelona.
I forgot the Barcelona one, and I didn't include the two against Lyon.
Yeah, so 0-1.
The Anderlecht one I completely forgot, others, because I only said three.
That surprised me that he'd six. That's fucking some going. It's really good. So he scored two goals in the 0-1-0-2 campaign, three goals in the 0-3-4 campaign.
You can totally see them the minute you say that.
I know. It's funny, isn't it? Okay.
It's not going great, is it?
Nah, it's not.
Let's be honest.
They are tough. They are, like, tough. It's not
one. It would be one each if we'd, you know, swapped.
Aye.
And if we knew the answers.
Okay.
Well, I knew the first one, you knew the second one.
So. Okay, question four for Chris Sormani. How many times have Celtic been in the Champions League group stages?
get six.
No, for no point, but I'll give you a guess, Alan.
Seven.
Ten.
Oh, for 10?
Seriously? 01, 02, 03, 04, 04, 05, 06, 07, 07, 08, 08, 09, 12, 13, 13, 14, 16, 17, 17, 18.
Bucks.
That shocked me as well, to be fair. Now this
Fenian mastermind is not going well.
So, Chris, of those... Sorry, you asked you last, didn't I? Alan, Chris,
next,
Alan,
how many Chris, questions Alan. Is there?
There's six.
All right, okay.
Alan, of the 10... How many times have Celtic finished bottom of their group?
Oh, Christ.
I mean, there's a couple you could easily kind of knock off.
Yeah. Four.
Correct.
Oh.
2004-05, 2008-09, 2013-14, and 2016-17. Well done. So it's 1-0 to Alan. And Sirmani, this is your last chance to get in, actually. This is a multiple choice one, though. So
great. Smash it.
Okay.
This is going to result in a tiebreaker, which we're both going to embarrass ourselves.
So, how many goals have Celtic scored in the Champions League group stage? So, we've been in it 10 times.
60 games. Couldn't do what you said there.
So, how many goals have Celtic scored in the Champions League?
64 games, because we've got two. Right. So, how many goals have we scored?
So, here's the multiple choice options.
Okay.
49, 59, 69. How many goals?
I know what number Bowden picked.
59.
Alan wins, correct, lovely.
Thanks, Crystal.
Do you want to hear the tiebreaker?
Yeah, why not?
Sure.
How many points have Celtic got in the Champions League?
Zero, because we haven't played our first game yet in the round.
Was this closest to it?
Aye.
How many points?
Seventy-eight.
72.
63. Oh, lovely.
I'm
that taking
was good a moral victory from that one, actually.
That was really good fun. Really enjoyed that. Terrific. We've got lots of stuff coming up on thecynic.co if you are subscribing. If not, we'll be back next week, in which we'll be covering. We've got a couple of games to cover. We'll the Ross County games on the Wednesday, and then obviously we'll be looking ahead to the Rangers game. Alan Edgar, pleasure as always, sir.
Thanks very much. Enjoyed it.
Christopher Smani, see you soon.
Loved it all, apart from the quiz.
Lovely. From Alan Edgar, from Christopher Sirmani, I'm Chris Gallagher. This has been The Cynic Weekly, and we'll speak to you down the road.